If you'd like to listen to the Daily Blast, plus all of our other DSR content without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, and enhanced show notes for select shows. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code GREG to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code GREG. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent.
A new consensus is settling in among political analysts. If President Biden is going to defeat Donald Trump and get reelected this fall, his path to victory almost certainly runs through the blue wall states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And of those three, the toughest for Biden to win, according to polls right now, is Wisconsin. And yet, Wisconsin is also the state where Democrats have boasted some of their biggest recent successes and have been doing some of their most intensive organizing in recent years. So can Democrats stop Trump in this state? What will that entail? To unravel all this, today we're talking to Ben Wickler, the chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. He's been at the forefront of some of those recent wins in the state and is one of the best organizers in the Democratic Party. Great to have you on here, Ben.
It's great to be back with you, Greg. I appreciate you having me on and I appreciate the spotlight on the Badger State.
So, like I said, a conventional wisdom is settling in that Arizona and Georgia and maybe even Nevada will be hard for Biden to win, which increases the pressure on Biden to sweep the three blue wall states in the Rust Belt that Trump won in 2016 and Biden took back in 2020, i.e. Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. I think it's premature to write off those Sun Belt states for a lot of reasons, but either way, even if Trump wins Arizona and Georgia, he's still going to need one of the three blue wall states to prevail, right? And Wisconsin is probably his best bet. That means if Biden can win Wisconsin, Trump probably can't win, right?
That's right. Wisconsin was the tipping point state for Trump in 2016 and the tipping point state for Biden in 2020. It's probably the state that goes to the winner and puts them over the top across a lot of different paths to the presidency. And that's why Trump was here in Wisconsin today as we're recording this. It's why Biden has been here seven times since the midterms. It's why Kamala Harris was here last week. Wisconsin is on a knife's edge. And whoever wins in November goes to the White House in most scenarios that most analysts can map out.
So let's talk about what's been going on in Wisconsin then. It was incredibly close in 2016 and 2020. And in 2022, Governor Tony Evers was reelected by over 3 points, though Dems lost the Senate contest. But then in 2023, Dems won the state Supreme Court race, which was all about abortion, by an astounding 11 points, I believe. That suggests the overturning of Roe v. Wade might be nudging Wisconsin in a blue direction and makes it seem as if Dems have rebuilt the blue wall, but now the current 538 averages look pretty grim, Ben. They have Biden trailing Trump by nearly 3 points. How do we understand this disparity between an 11-point win last year in the state Supreme Court race and trailing by nearly 3 now?
Wisconsin is almost perfectly evenly divided in terms of our population. And what that means is that we're usually very close to the line, but also we can wobble to one side or the other quite easily. The races where someone wins by double digits tend to be unusual in various respects. So we won the Supreme Court race in 2023. That was polled afterwards to find out what had motivated voters. Our theory was proven out, which is that abortion was the central overriding issue and democracy was number two. What happened in that race, Supreme Court races are low turnout elections compared to presidential races. And within the electorate of people who normally vote in the spring in Supreme Court races, we won a much more narrow victory. But then hundreds of thousands of people turned out who otherwise would not have turned out because of abortion and democracy and voted overwhelmingly for Janet Protasiewicz over Dan Kelly. So That was great. I love that. And at the same time, all those people are most likely going to vote this November. The presidential turnout in Wisconsin is often above 70%. Typically, not in 2016, but most other elections it is. So the low-hanging fruit, in a sense, is gone. There's a lot of people who only turn out in presidential elections. And it becomes a question of how high you can push turnout and how you persuade. You have to do both things in Wisconsin to be able to win. One of the misconceptions about 2016 versus 20 is that in 2016, Trump won by 7/10 of a point. In 2020, Biden won by 6/10 of a point. Looks like not much movement. But in reality, both sides organized the living daylights out of the state. Both sides added more votes in every single county in Wisconsin. There were hundreds of thousands of additional voters in 2020 compared to 2016. So if Democrats had let them down their guard for 1 minute or in one corner of the state, we would have lost because it was a red wave met by a blue wave of even greater intensity, slightly greater intensity. And as in this year, in 2024, you can kind of see those dynamics playing out. There are a ton of people who are profoundly motivated by the attacks on freedom, reproductive freedom, abortion, the attacks on democracy, who are alarmed by the prospect of another Trump presidency. There are fired up Trumpists, who many of whom believe completely in the big lie and the idea that 2020 was stolen and they're out for a kind of political revenge. And then there's a lot of people who would rather not think about politics, who in some ways are, you know, in absorbing the vibes about you know, what's happening, what they're catching on the TV at a sports bar or hearing from friends or seeing on TikTok or what have you. And we have to, you know, we have to make the case everywhere to everyone in the ways that actually make sense to them, knowing that this election will depend in no small part on people who are trying to actively avoid political news, who would rather not think about politics at all, who have not voted in the midterms or in the Supreme Court race or at all since the 2020 election, or maybe not even then. And it could come down to a few thousand of those folks to determine the next president of the United States.
Can you go into the demographics a bit here? Why is Trump up 2 to 3 points right now in Wisconsin? What explains it?
Well, the first thing is that demographically, Wisconsin looks like a red state, not a blue state or a purple state. The population of Wisconsin is more than 80% white voters. The electorate is even whiter than that, both because voters of color are more likely to be young and before voting age, also because of mass incarceration that's disproportionately visited upon African-Americans, and also because Republicans have rigged our voting laws to especially suppress the votes of young voters and voters of color, especially Black voters. So the Target Smart estimate in 2020 was that Wisconsin's electorate was 92% white, and 62% of the electorate was white voters who hadn't attended college, which, you know, that's the majority of voters in Wisconsin, many other states. And that is a lot more than in Michigan or in Pennsylvania or in, I think, any of the other states that have gone for Biden in 2020. So you have a lot of voters who demographically you would think are more likely to be Republican. And the reality is there's a deep, rich, working class progressive tradition in Wisconsin. And that cuts across the white working class, Black working class, Latino working class. There's a rural Wisconsin progressive tradition. The birthplace in many ways of the progressive movement nationally was in rural Wisconsin. And there are people whose families for generations back have been involved in Democratic politics and progressive party politics and progressive Republican politics in every corner of our state. They have not fallen off a cliff in the way that the progressive Democrats in, let's say, even Minnesota or Iowa have. In Minnesota, there's a much bigger concentration of the population in the Twin Cities, so the urban population is much bigger. In Iowa, if you look across the Wisconsin-Iowa border, the neighboring counties in southwest Wisconsin, northeast Iowa, they've gone red. And in Wisconsin, we've been able to hold on and reduce the kind of wipeout that's happened in rural parts of the state. We're still losing, but we're losing by less than Democrats are in a lot of other places. So it's almost like the question is, how is it that it's within 2 points as opposed to, you know, why are we not trouncing Trump in our state, given the ideological pressures that people feel, the dominance of right-wing talk radio and right-wing propaganda on Fox News and other places that has really taken a lot of parts of the country off the map for Democrats. Here, because of, I think, a lot of this kind of grassroots energy, because of these deep roots for the progressive tradition, and work that the Democrats are doing at the grassroots level all over the state, we have a fighting chance. And that's what keeps Wisconsin elections tied up, plus some movement in the Milwaukee suburbs and just explosive turnout and Democratic margins in places like Madison, where I grew up and where I live now. All of that almost perfectly cancels out the rise of the right-wing machine in other parts of the state that mirrors the rise across the country.
So what exactly is going on right now? Do you believe that the polling averages showing Biden down 2 to 3 points are more or less right? Obviously, it's a long way to go. No one should treat these polls as predictive. But sort of assuming that you do think that this is a fair reading of the current state of the election, what has to happen to get Biden over the top? You mentioned some of the suburban vote, around Milwaukee, some of those counties which really shifted in a big way in the state Supreme Court race. Is there maybe a bit of a problem among some of those suburban voters right now? Maybe they're not quite tilting Democratic by the numbers we need. If not, why not? And is the intensity in the cities not where it needs to be? What's the problem right now, and what has to happen to fix it?
So I would say that the biggest thing is visible if you look at the Kennedy number. In the 538 average, Kennedy is 9.6%. That's RFK. And those are essentially voters. Some of them are drawn to Kennedy, but a lot of them are voters saying like, nah. It's a version of undecided or none of the above. And a lot of those voters, if they learn about how terrible and right-wing and anti-vaccine and conspiracy-minded and all this stuff RFK Jr. is, they wind up coming towards Biden more than they do towards Trump. Now, there's other voters who would come to Trump rather than Biden if they know about his environmental record or what have you. And the far right is determined to tell those voters about RFK's history on environmental stuff. But that is not the RFK who's running for president. This guy is a full-on conspiracy theorist. So one general thing you have is voters who know almost nothing about what Biden has done in office, that when you review the specific policies with them, they love them. They love taking on drug companies, bringing down the cost of insulin. They love the investments in infrastructure and the explosion of jobs, especially for working class folks that are building things all over Wisconsin, all over the country. But they don't know that stuff is happening. It's usually not news day to day. It's not conflict, so it doesn't generate headlines in the same way. There are a bunch of voters who will speak to the issues that they're seeing on Fox. There's a bunch of voters who are still, understandably, really mad about the cost of groceries and the cost of gas and those kinds of pocketbook things. A lot of these voters, if you dig in with them on, I hear you on these prices, would you vote for someone who wants a national abortion ban, who struck down Roe versus Wade, who endorses the idea of tracking women's pregnancies so they can be prosecuted by state governments? And their answer is absolutely not, over my dead body. Like, that is an uncrossable line for a lot of these voters. Those qualities of Trump are not front of mind for people when they watch him on TV. It comes up in focus groups all the time. People say, oh, he's probably paid for abortions. He's probably not pro-life. But we know is that in a campaign, you can lay out the case and that can move people. So I think that where we are right now is a snapshot of an electorate that is generally kind of pissed off and weary. But I don't think that tells us where we're going to be at the end of this campaign, because we can see the path to victory that involves a huge amount of organizing and communication. And we know that the issue, the case that we can make does move people, because that's how we won the governor's race and the Supreme Court race before. We just have to do that work.
It is incredible that Trump codes as moderate on abortion. I've actually heard that from others, other Democrats and other people kind of in the never Trump world. But about that work, right? You mentioned that Wisconsin is whiter than other blue wall states. It's got a higher concentration of non-college whites, good demographic for Trump. And rural Wisconsin, as you said, is really Trump country. It's a tough state for Democrats for all these reasons. But can you talk a bit about the organizing that party has been doing in rural Wisconsin? Where does Biden have to shave the margins to in rural Wisconsin to win? Like a number, like can you give us a sense of where he really has to get it to? And what are you hearing from these voters that gives you any hope that this will be doable? Are you getting penetration in these places?
We are. And the reality is that because Wisconsin's so close, every voter and every group of voters has extraordinary power. Black voters can absolutely put Biden over the top. So can Latino voters. So can young voters, old voters, rural voters, suburban voters, folks in cities. And we have to be everywhere all the time to be able to open the widest window towards winning. I was just in Montello, Wisconsin, which has a population of 1,429. It's in Marquette County. And we just opened our Democratic office there. It's at 20 Main Street. 10 Main Street is the Republican office. And it's a place where if Democrats weren't actively organizing, going to the parades in town and writing letters to the editor of the weekly newspaper and having a physical presence, people could look around and think, Democrats have given up on this place and places like this. They don't see us in our lives. But our big goal is by making sure that Democrats everywhere have the tools they need to be visible and to be organized, that we make clear to voters that Democrats are not some them far away trying to impose something on them. Democrats are us. Democrats are people like us, wherever you are in Wisconsin, that are advocating for things that most people want. And I'll give a really specific example of that. Public schools. In rural Wisconsin, public schools are often the lifeblood of the community. It's not like there are private schools that people are going to. The public school systems are so critical, and they unite communities. They bring people together. Community events are held at schools. They're buildings that have facilities that are used for all kinds of other functions of a democracy and of a community. And Republicans in Wisconsin have systematically defunded public schools. It's something that enrages so many people, and you know, not just parents of kids in school and educators, but everyone whose life story is kind of knitted through the story of what happened at their school is still going to people going to athletic events, you know, related to their school teams. And Democrats fight for schools. We fight for schools. We fight for unions and family supporting jobs. We fight for clean air and water. We fight for rebuilding roads and infrastructure and doing things that make life work everywhere. Right now, there's a huge fight with our governor trying to ensure that funds are released, that our state government actually allocated to clean up forever chemicals and support healthcare. And there are hospitals that are closing that Democrats are trying to rescue. And that is stuff that is invisible to people unless Democrats communicate that they're doing it. It's incredibly popular, but it doesn't tell its own story, if that makes sense. It doesn't involve national figures duking it out on cable TV or in the moments that go viral on TikTok. So Democrats actually have to not only do the right thing, they have to show that they're doing the right thing. They have to get caught trying. And that is a lot of the work that our local organizing does. We have neighborhood teams all over Wisconsin, hundreds of them that knock on doors in their own community year round, often in snow and rain and sleet, also in the beautiful spring and summer conditions that we're entering into right now. We make sure that we have yard signs that we distribute all over the place. We call it Leave No Yard Unsigned. We take that really seriously because it's a way of not just building name recognition, but conveying to people the endorsement of people in their own community for our candidates. We have a big candidate recruitment effort working with our legislative caucuses and with our partners around the state to make sure we can fill the ballot this year and have candidates running everywhere so voters have a real choice. All that kind of local presence, part of what it conveys is respect. It conveys to voters that we see them, we take them seriously, we want to earn their vote. And we appreciate that, you know, that they have something really to offer our state, that they deserve to be represented in our state government. And frankly, Mandela Barnes says, voters don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. That's part of what we're trying to communicate. The meta message of this work is that we do care about these voters, and we want to earn their votes so that together with them, together, we can actually build a state that works for everyone.
So, Ben, where do you have to get the margins in rural Wisconsin to win?
Well, let's take a tour of the state. So in northern Wisconsin, there's this huge 26-county congressional district, the 7th district. Not until 2010, it was represented by a Democrat, Dave Obey. That's a district that is pretty red now, but we can lose by less there. So if we can hold our margin or gain a point, we're going to come nowhere close to winning unless lightning strikes, which, you know, I'd love. We have a great candidate for Congress. But probably that's an area where we can try to hold down Trump's margin. Northeast Wisconsin, it's an open seat. Mike Gallagher stepped down. He doesn't want to be on the ballot with Trump, I think. That's a district where actually, we have a candidate who's an OBGYN who's personally has really a compelling message about the abortion bans and will be shooting for an upset. But it's also an area where every additional vote is a swing vote. So it adds one to Biden and removes one from Trump statewide. Go down to the 5th and 6th congressional districts around Milwaukee. Those are very, very red. Wisconsin is, unlike Pennsylvania, the suburbs are actually still Republican by and large. But the margin there is swinging faster than anywhere else in our state. So it used to be that Democrats would shoot for 30% in Waukesha County. Now we shoot for 40%. And that is a game-changing opportunity for us to find votes.
And Ben, that drove the state Supreme Court race victory, right? Those counties?
That's exactly right. Although, I mean, the wow counties, Washington, Ozaukee, and Waukesha are right around Milwaukee. We did much better in those counties. The bow counties, which are in northeast Wisconsin, that's Brown, Outagamie, and Winnebago, those are counties that we actually won in the Supreme Court race, which are historically have always gone for Republicans. So the improvement Democrats had in the Supreme Court race was everywhere. It was not regional. It wasn't like some areas got redder, some areas got bluer. The whole state shifted bluer, especially because of women everywhere are righteously and rightfully insisting that they should make their own decisions about their own bodies. That you talk to women in rural areas, especially, there's some doors where you knock on a door and there's a conservative husband who isn't home at that moment, and the wife in the family is happy to talk about how incredibly angry she is as long as he's out of earshot. That's an experience that many canvassers have had across the state. There's a real gender gap that arose because of Dobbs' decision, or that was accelerated because of Dobbs. And there are a lot of men who are concerned about reproductive freedom as well. But we see that in all parts of the state. So the swing in the suburbs, if we can continue that, that makes a big difference. Breaking out of the straitjacket of voter suppression in Milwaukee is a critical piece of this. You can measure, if you look at the Evers versus Barnes, you can see the impact of the Republican voter suppression law in Milwaukee and say that was responsible for the 1% loss in the Senate race. Or you can go to the kind of reddest areas of the state where there was a 5-point gap between Evers' vote share and Mandela Barnes' vote share. And you can say that was the victory. Really, either one. On the other hand, Mandela Barnes did better than any other Democrat challenging an incumbent Republican in the country. So it's also a story of strength in that sense. But then coming back, there's also 320,000 college students in Wisconsin. So campus votes. We have 22 UW system schools. UW-Madison is enormous, but there's also UW-La Crosse, Eau Claire, Oshkosh, Green Bay, Milwaukee, all these different places. Campus votes are really critical. And then we have 205,000 union members in our state, which is much, much, much less than there used to be before Scott Walker smashed unions in Wisconsin. But the union vote is about 10 times Biden's margin of victory from 2020. So I know this is a kind of long way of saying you have to sweat every single aspect of the small and big stuff in this state. That's the only way to have a realistic shot.
All right, let's shift. We're seeing some clashes between campus protesters and cops in Wisconsin right now. And I think it's worth remembering that some of the most intense scenes of civil unrest during the summer of 2020, during that election, occurred in Wisconsin. I mean, if there was any state where Trump could turn that to his advantage, it's Wisconsin, but Trump lost. And yet it seems as if these current protests might be politically potentially harder for Biden and Democrats in some ways. What's your reading on that? How worried are you about the impact this could have?
I think, campus protests are part of a very deep tradition in our state of protests and protest politics. The students in these campuses are sending a message about wanting policy change now. And the president and the president's team are working to reach a mutually agreed on ceasefire. That is the explicit goal of the president and the secretary of state. If they can succeed this summer, it makes a huge difference this fall. Even if, whatever happens, which is in some ways outside of the United States' control, making clear that the United States works towards, believes in an enduring just peace that ensures self-determination for Israelis and Palestinians alike, that creates a contrast with Trump, who does not actually care at all, probably about either side in the conflict, and absolutely not about the future of Palestinians in this conflict. And I think the at this moment, people are organizing for change in the near term. It's not like people are saying we want change in 2025. When we get to the fall, we're going to be in a different moment. My hope is deeply that we're in a very different moment on the ground in Israel and Palestine. We'll also be in a different moment politically in the United States, where people are choosing between two different futures. And, you know, as AOC said in response to a question like this, if you're a protester, then when you vote for president, you can decide who you want to be protesting. Do you want to be protesting someone who's talking about sending in U.S. troops to suppress domestic dissent? Or do you want to protest someone who actually listens to everyone and tries to figure out what the right thing to do? And that's, you know, that's a different kind of vote than a enthusiastically, you know, pro one candidate or another vote. But for all of us, we're really choosing which kind of future we want to live in. And I think when we get to the fall, it'll be a different kind of conversation than people are having now.
Well, on that note, Ben Wickler, let's call it a day. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks so much, Greg. Really appreciate it.
Folks, we have some great new content for you up at TNR.com that you should check out. Alex Shepard on why Biden needs the New York Times, and Matt Ford asking, can copyright law save journalism from AI? We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.